Chapter 2 Inside Caversham Heights Book:YGIO:120:4961::: Title, Caversham Heights, UK, 1976, 90,000 words. Genre, detective fiction. Book operating system, Book V7.2, Gramicite infestation. 1 nesting pair of parentheums, protected. Plot, routine detective thriller with stereotypical detective Jack Spratt. Set in Reading, England. The plot, such as it is, revolves around a drug czar hoping to muscle in on Reading's seedy underworld. Routine and unremarkable, Caversham Heights represents all the worst aspects of amateur writing. Flat characters, unconvincing police work, and a pace so slow that snails pass it in the night. Recommendation? Unpublishable. Suggest book to be broken up for salvage at soonest available opportunity. Current status, awaiting Council of Genres Book Inspectorate's report before ordering demolition. Library Sub-Basement Gazetteer, 1982, Volume CLXI. I discussed the rudiments of breakfast with Ib and Ob the following morning. I told them that cereal traditionally came before the bacon and eggs, but that toast and coffee had no fixed place within the meal. They had problems with the fact that marmalade was almost exclusively the preserve of breakfast, and I was just trying to explain the technical possibilities of dippy egg fingers when a copy of The Toad dropped on the mat. The only news story was about some sort of drug-related gang warfare in Reading. It was part of the plot in Caversham Heights and reminded me that sooner or later, and quite possibly sooner, I would be expected to take on the mantle of Mary as part of the character exchange programme. I had another careful read of the précis, which gave me a good idea of the plot, chapter by chapter, but no precise dialogue or indication as to what I should be doing or when. I didn't have to wonder very long, as a knock at the door revealed an untidy man wearing a hat named Wyatt.
"Sorry," he said sheepishly, apologising for the misrelated grammatical construction almost immediately. "Wyatt is my name, not the hat's."
"I kind of figured that," I replied. Wooden and worn with use, he was holding a clipboard.
"Oh, bother," he said, in the manner of someone who had just referred to George Eliot as he in a room full of English professors. "I've done it again."
"Really, I don't mind," I repeated. "What can I do for you?"
"You're very kind. As a character exchange programme member, I would like to ask you to get yourself into Reading."
He stopped, and his shoulders sagged.
"No, I'm not the character exchange programme member. You are, and you need to get into Reading."
"Sure. Do you have an address for me?"
"Dog-eared and grubby."
He handed me a note from his clipboard.
"Don't worry," I said, before he could apologise again. "I understand."
His condition was almost certainly permanent, and since I didn't seem to care that much, he regained some confidence.
"Despite the 10-year demolition order hanging over us," he continued, "you should try and give it your best. The last character exchanger didn't take it seriously at all. Had to send him dusty and covered in asphalt on the road out of here."
He raised an eyebrow quizzically.
"I won't let you down," I assured him.
He thanked me, and small, brown and furry, the man with the hat named Wyatt, raised it and vanished. I took Mary's car and drove into Reading across the M4, which seemed as busy as it was back home. I used the same road myself when travelling between Swindon and London. Only when I was approaching the junction at the top of Bergfield Road did I realise there were, at most, only a half dozen or so different vehicles on the roads. The vehicle that first drew my attention to this strange phenomenon was a large white truck with Dr. Spong Foot Care Products painted on the side. I saw three in under a minute, all with an identical driver dressed in a blue boiler suit and flat cap. The next most obvious...